Chevrolet. Chevrolet 5.
This director of the DST, Security of the Territory in Lyon, was, I learned later, a member of some of Resistance Réseau and was absolutely on our side. Therefore, we had no difficulty in organizing my coming escape and so on, with all the carefulness of not showing that he was himself member of the resistance. I had time to pass. I had 500,000 French francs on the belt, which the gendarme didn't find. They didn't search me, in fact, very much. So I had time to pass on to the réseau the money I was bringing from London, and I was sent to what is called in Lyon the Petit Dépôt, which is the sort of pre-prison awaiting judgment of decision by the judge. For a day or two, and then to the famous prison of Montluc, where later the famous Gestapo member Barbie was running his interrogations. One must not forget that the period of my action in parachute was before the invasion of the non-occupied zone of France. There were legally no German member of the army or Gestapo or others in this area of France. It was purely French. But I very quickly learned that although it is even now hardly said, the German secret service in Gestapo had in fact a sort of droit de regard, a right of control on all arrests dealing with the security of the French territory. I was then told by this director of the Sécurité du Territoire that he had to interrogate me on my mission, not in front of the Gestapo members, or maybe the Wehrmacht intelligence, I can't make out now, I still don't know really, I didn't search really. But these German officers coming from Paris were sitting in the next room where I was interrogated. I was therefore interrogated by the chief of the French security in his office, but all questions were asked by the Gestapo or German secret service on the other room, and the French responsible was going in and out of his room to get my questions, get the question the Germans wanted, ask me the question and give them the answer. I don't think it is very well known, this period, but here it was. Although they had legally no right, but we know what was the agreement with his Pétain, I had the foolproof that the Germans had a look on all actions taken by the French Vichy police. The French policeman, chief of the DST, as I told you, was a member of one of our réseau, maybe not attached to SOE, but anyway, he was a resistance member. And we managed to, together, working the answers to the Germans in such a way that they would be entirely
directed
by my answers. And I'm glad to say that this little part of interrogation is a great success in the purely intelligent section during this short period of the war. We managed, or I managed, but had the help of this, to make the Germans believe that my actions was a pre-action for a huge parachute actions somewhere in France, in order to block all possible action between French occupied and non-occupied territory. And my boss, Colonel McMaster, on his memoirs, has written a chapter on that. And it is only after the war, and I was thanked by the Russian for that, that it was the period of the fights, Stalingrad, and the period of the fights in Russia, that due to this information, which went up to the Hitler's headquarters, an entire division of the Russian front was brought back to the French front, and therefore dismantled, for one division, the action of the German army on the Russian front. Back to this. It is a small thing, but it is a very good example of what can be done by words during a war.
Before we go any further, I think we've forgotten to say that your code name was Patrice.
Yes, quite right. Roland was my code name during the school period, and my code name in the SOE was Patrice. Well, this was a little example of this period of arrest. After that, I was transferred to the prison St. Paul. There's nothing very special to say on this period of prison. My only aim was to try and escape, which eventually I did. Thanks to the sanitary organization of the prison, I was supposed to have a diphtheria, in English, diphtheria, and I was sent to a prison, to the hospital of the Croix-Rousse in Lyon, which is not a prison hospital, it was a public hospital, but in a room guarded with two permanently at the door by two gendarmes. But during this period, Nicolas came and visited me. Jean Regnier, you may have heard of in Lyon, he's also an SOE. He was recruited after, sent home for training and back in 1944, I think. Jean Regnier, he was already recruited on place. I had contact with all our friends, including Edward Zeff, a radio operator. You may not have heard of him. He died more than 10 years ago.
No, I haven't.
I was arrested the second time. I'd come to that with Edward Zeff. We got in touch and we prepared my escaping from the hospital. The problem was that night and day I had two guards at the door, and probably well-selected guards, no hope of gaining their sympathy, except for two. which were the two who passed on my messages to the outside part of the réseau. The window was locked with a special key, and I managed with soap to take the print of the key and have it passed on outside. I've got, therefore, the key. I must say that all nurses, doctors, and so on was extremely sympathetic to my case and, how shall I say, ready to help without risk. It's about that, but still ready to help. One of them was a young nurse, a sister, in fact, and I'm a bit responsible in front of God of extracting a sister out of a discipline, because she, due to the fact that I used her to pass on messages, she got in contact with a member of our recruited réseau and met a young boy, and they finally got married. So she was a sister, she helped me and joined the resistance, made a superb little daughter, and I'm the godfather of the girl of the sister, which is also another strange and funny story of the war. And then, having all this, one night I managed to silently escape, jumped through the window, went into the back courtyard, jumped on another little roof, and out of the wall of the of the hospital. It was about 1 o'clock, and the chap who was every night coming at the meeting point until I managed to escape was late, and I had to wait 2 hours with my shirt, hospital, because all my clothes had been taken away. I was just purely with my shirt. 2 hours in during the night waiting for my chap to come, and suddenly I saw his face over the fence. And he arrived with a pair of trousers, a coat, everything except the shoes. So I have to walk through Lyon with my socks into a safe house. And the next morning I find again Nicolas, Eugène, the wireless operator, which is Edward Zeff, Gustave, all our team, and went back to to my task of instructor for a short while, because having been through all this, my security was a bit out of range, and I was ordered to go back as soon as possible in order to come back. Now the thing is getting a bit complicated, because instead of staying in Lyon, I could not go back because of what had happened to Tours and Le Mans, and I was sent for a while to Saint-Étienne, where I instructed a few, especially the railway. My real knowledge was sabotage of railways and blow-up trains and so on, which I can still do today if I am asked one. if I may have a few words on that. Yes. It is amazing, having been trained the way we were being trained for sabotage and blow-up of all things, although today there are still sabotage of all sorts of things by these famous all sort of groups. And I remember a few years ago in Paris, a well-known house called Fauchon. It is a luxurious house of all sorts of food products, wines, very, very rich sort of thing, and some extreme left association decided to blow up the thing because of the view they had on the way to spend their riches. And the sabotage was absolutely, in our views, absolutely perfect. And I remember with a friend of mine called Bader. You may have known Bader. He's now the president of the French Association of SOE Recruited in France. We went by car around the place where the sabotage took part to, I must say, admire the way it had been done. That's real professional, all the thing. And then after all this, I was directed to come back to home, to HQ, together with Edward Zeff, who was a radio operator 53 called Eugène, who is dead now. He was a shirt maker in Paris. And it has an importance in my story, the fact that he was a shirt maker. So we prepared to go back, but there was no Lysander at the time. Remember, it was 43 then, and Lysander's operation were not in great actions. I don't think we had many Lysander at the time. And taking back four chaps with us, plus Edward Zeff and myself, we were ordered to go back through Spain again.
What date have we reached now when you received these orders?
March 43. Everything went on rather well. I think London knew I'd already gone through Spain, so I knew what we were facing and could have helped the others in the old way I explained right at the beginning of my interview. We arrived in Amélie-les-Bains and were taken over by a guide who was presented to us as a member of our organization.
Where is Amélie-les-Bains?
Amélie-les-Bains is south of Perpignan, practically at the Spanish border. But one must not forget that 43, France has been fully occupied then by the Germans. When I was dropped, it was non-occupied zone, but when I left, it was occupied country. There were Germans everywhere. So we had to pass all this area with Germans there. And the border guard were no more French guards, but the famous German Grenzpolizei, frontier police. Everything went on well. We had a day's rest in Perpignan and Amélie-les-Bains in the evening. We went out through the Pyrenees and after 1 hour or less walk, we were caught by Grenzpolizei Germans. Really waiting for us.
You mean they'd been tipped off?
They'd been tipped off, and we know perfectly well that they'd been tipped off by the guide presented to us as a member of one of our organization, escaping organization.
How did you find this out?
Oh, very simple. We were arrested during the night or late night. Day broke. We walked down with the escort of German. We had been shot at very strongly because Edward Zeff and myself, we tried to run away. I had a couple of bullets in my coat, I realized after, but I was in touch. One of our chaps had been shot through the head. He probably died at hospital. We had no further news. He had a bullet through the head. here, went out here.
Went through his nose?
Went through, well, I don't know the way it went. The bullet, really, we saw it when we stopped at the German police station. The hole was here and here, so the bullet went right through like that.
So it went through the corner of his eye?
And corner of his eyes and out back of his ear. He was, in our views, dying. What happened to him after, I don't know, but I don't think he survived the attack. And we walked to the police station, quite a long way, because we were right in the country. And I forgot the name of the small place. It says outside of Amélie-les-Bains, Arles-sur-Tech or something like that. I'm not sure. And the young guide was supposed to be arrested with us, and we realized he was speaking German with the guards. When he arrived at the police station, he just entered with us, talked to the German, waved goodbye, and went away. So it is absolutely obvious that he had brought us home and back to a second mission. Right? But we had no, and this is the what we thought with Edward Zeff, we had no way of telling the outside world that this chap was a traitor. No way. So, and that was the beginning of the third part of my action, or so-called action. We were arrested by the Gestapo as we knew it, but the Gestapo there didn't know, as agent of the SOE, Edward Zeff and myself, radio operator and instructor. Before leaving for this last action, we decided with Edward Zeff that in case we were caught, we would not speak a word of French, and we prepared a cover story of two Air Force chaps shot down and being taken away by a French organization unknown to go back home. We played the part of two Air Force going through an escape line in order to avoid to be known too soon by the Gestapo. In case of interrogations, leave the time to our organization to know eventually. And when we were arrested, we stopped speaking French. We spoke English between us, English with the Germans, could not understand a word of French. And this story took us March, April, May, June, 4 months. We were supposed to be in the end of the Gestapo or the German army. Our idea was, if our story would catch, to be sent to an officer's lager, Hoflag, and therefore escape more easily than we could have escaped as an SOE, and we really thought, as an SOE, that we would be shot, there's no doubt, in our view. We didn't know at the time of concentration camp, NN, and so on.
And NN? Can you explain the meaning of NN?
Nacht und Nebel, the famous classification category, which we wear at the end, Nacht und Nebel, which means disappear in the fog and not supposed to come back. In fact, it was a slow death.
It literally means night and the fog.
Night and fog, yes. It is taken from Goethe, the famous poem of Parsifal, who disappeared in night and the fog. That shows that the German, as cruel they may be, have always the side of poetry in the back of their mind. And we kept this story. We went in the prison in Perpignan and then to the prison of Fresnes near Paris, the main prison. No special interrogation for weeks. Interrogation, or maybe a month or two later, and I kept the story of, no, I'm Air Force, I knew in London a friend of the family who was a gunner in the Royal Air Force called Andrew Fry. And I knew he had been shot down and disappeared before I left. Been shot down somewhere in the Channel. Anyway, he was reported missing. So I, knowing him well, I entirely took over his personality, names, Christian names, family and everything. And I was known as Andrew Fry, even in the prison of Friend. And it went on for several months. You asked me for an amusing story. I was in a cell with three Frenchmen. Now, you imagine the life in a cell, 24 hours per day, all together, the three Frenchmen speaking French, and I was not supposed to understand either the way they were talking about me, their jokes. They were all extremely nice persons, and I was not speaking French. Now, what would you do in a cell in order to pass the time? Since this poor Englishman doesn't speak French, we're going to teach him French. And for nearly a month, every day I had my French lesson. Now, it was an extremely difficult thing to, first of all, keep serious, learn with an very, very bad French, English accent, in my case, even more funny. All the words, they teach me. And the thing for me was to remember exactly for the next day, not to know too much. It was really an excellent operation mentally. And it went on. The chap who taught me French at the time, I met him after the war, he attended my wedding, and he told my wife, if I were you, I'll be extremely careful, because I have the proof, he's an extraordinary good liar. And one day, now we come back to the drama, in fact, one day I was taken to the interrogation, and I realized, being in the car with the Gestapo, that there was something on. They were not absolutely sure, the people who took me, but they knew that something had changed, and I felt it immediately. They carried on talking English to me, or slight English, but on a much rougher way than they used to when they thought I was a pilot. I was an RAF. It is strange how they behave with me for the period they thought I was a Royal Air Force. Totally different. And suddenly I felt this. There is a change. And one of them, just before arriving, not to the usual place, but to a smaller place around the Bois de Boulogne, told his friend, in French, but I understood, he's going to see if he can't speak French now. And I thought, now they know something. I arrived in this house, and who should I find in the cellar? The Gestapo told another one, show him, yes, you can show him, see his reaction.